Mr. Hewitt, reel one.
It doesn't frighten me, the mic, in that sense.
Good. Mr. Hewitt, could you tell me, first of all, something about what was happening to you in Leicester before the First World War began? You mentioned in your letter the Green Bile murder.
Green
what
Bicycle.
Was that? Oh, Green Bicycle murder. Ah, yes.
I would be about 12 years old at that time. The Green Bicycle murder was a murder committed by a man who rode a green bicycle. That was the only clue they'd got. It was noted in Leicester as a Green Bicycle murder. It was found on a canal bank some distance from where we lived in Belgrave, and eventually they did catch this fellow. Whether they proved it absolute, I wouldn't know, but that is the Green Bicycle murder. There's not a lot to it in a sense, only a matter of coming. Yes.
This seems a very sort of morbid curiosity. What was the High Kicker murder?
The High Kicker murder was, I wouldn't know this at the time, I was too young, but I believe, I'm thinking right in saying this, it was a prostitute who lived in Burley's Lane. And it was a notorious quarter down there for low living or what have you. And she was murdered there, and she was called the High Kicker for some obvious reason. She kicked a man's hat off for kind of business, that's the reason she was called High Kicker, and she was murdered in a little house in Burley's Lane in Leicester, where the new road is now.
And the other one, the Porter and Preston.
Yeah, the Porter and Preston murder were two Salver characters who lived in Salver near Leicester, and they were poachers, and they had an argument or something against this policeman because his horse on to them, and they decided to shoot him one day. Well, they got alongside the church with whatever gun they got, I don't know. And this constable come along, but it didn't happen to be the same one as was after, but they couldn't see in the dark, I suppose. Then they shot and killed him, and the siege began from there all around the village, and they finally caught them in the house in the village, and they were both hanged for the murder of this policeman. But it was the wrong policeman to call. That's Porter and Preston.
Before the First World War began, can you remember any anti-German hostility?
Not before the war, no. In matter of fact, reverse, because in the marketplace there was one or two big cafes, but one particular big cafe, and that was a Continental Cafe that was run by a German. And as the only anti-German feeling, I would say, would be more on the humorous side, because in the comic papers you'd see strips of an old German professor with spectacles on sketching military installations or whatever kind of camouflage, but it was a joke. But at the same time, there was something there, but it wasn't anti-German in that sense. The only anti-German feeling, am I going too fast for you?
No.
The only anti-German feeling we experienced and actually saw was principally this particular Continental Cafe in the Marketplace. That was completely smashed out with the windows of the mob, and various other small shops that could have been German, could have been foreigners. I mean, I wouldn't know in that sense, we were too young, but they was smashed, and I don't remember anybody being beaten up, physically assaulted, whether it was or not, I wouldn't know, but I didn't see any. Beyond that, and beyond the interest, morbid interest shown in the war, in the German civilian war prisoners who was interned in the corn exchange Leicester, beyond that it was a matter of just interest. I mean, there was no actual hostility towards them even then, although they was being escorted to the corn exchange under guard of the 4th Battalion Territorials, and no hostility, not as I saw.
When the First World War began, there are quite a number of stories of German atrocities and so on. Was there any hint before the war that the Germans might be thought capable of such things?
No, definitely not.
You were at school when the First World War began,
yeah.
Were you?
I was 14. I just left school. I'll be 14 in August of 1914.
What did you do then? You went to work then, did you?
I was working at Mobbs and Lewis, Fairbrothers rather, in Leicester, later Mobbs and Lewis, at Woodlast, making Woodlast.
What was your reaction when the First World War began?
Before the war began, we used to take a big interest in the Leicester Yeomanry and to go to the camps and so forth, and to that we was rather pleased, like little boys, was with anything military, and as such, when the war broke out, we was Now to find a feeling, we're more interested, very interested, rather exhilarated, rather pleased that something was happening, very, I've created a word, very interested in what was going around, and
so
no,
enthusiastic
is the word I'm thinking of, thank you, very enthusiastic about everything. In fact, we spent all the time around the magazine in the Newarks where the 4th Battalion terriers were mobilising, and I think that is why I got 4th Battalion in my mind when I wanted to enlist so badly. I think that's where the 4th Battalion came from. There was a territorial battalion, you see.
How did other people in your area react to the
The older generation was a little bit more subdued, as far as I remember, but we, in the youthful exuberance, we simply took it under a chin. We couldn't care less about that in that sense. We were more interested in our own gladness, if we put it that way.
How long did you think the First World War would last?
Not long. I mean, we was only guided by people who knew about wars in that sense, and as I say, everybody thought and was saying that if they didn't get him before Christmas, you missed your chance. Therefore, the recruiting queues were four deep for miles long at that period.
When did your idea about how long the war might last alter?
Well, I don't know as it did alter in that sense, because we've been on and on that long that to us it seemed never ending, and wasn't any idea of any war ending whatsoever, not in that term.
Before you went out to the Western Front, what did you think the war was going to be like?
Well, we had been through the training, we'd been through advancing under fire, we've been through the gas chamber, we've been through simulated artillery fire and all the half training that we had. We didn't know that a shell killed men, we didn't know the maimed and wounded, we didn't know what a gas would do, but at the same time we wasn't exactly innocent, we didn't expect a picnic, we knew we was in trenches, we were now in store for some hard fighting and so forth, but we didn't know actually what it meant to come down to brass tacks. We only surmised what we thought we knew.
You hadn't had any sort of stories before you joined up of what
was
going to happen?
Yes, but there again, when you get a story from the front line, they're inclined, whoever's telling you, inclined to glorify it that little bit, that you take the glory part about it and you miss the ugly part that is not said.
Did you know anything in advance about the mud?
I would say no, because at that time the censorship was that strict, you wouldn't be allowed to know anything about the terrors or the discomforts and so forth. You might get it offhand, but you wouldn't definitely get it in print. You wouldn't get it like his photographs of Senior Frank and say no.
Were you did old soldiers when you were doing your training tell you how to deal with lice, or that there would be lice even? Do
no.
you expect that?
No. No.
And was the war very different from what you did expect when you got there?
Well, I would say yes, because in no circumstances, in my opinion, can anyone tell you what war's like unless they're actually in the front line. I don't care what novels they read or what they know. Unless they've been in the front line, they cannot tell you. And even if they do tell you, you cannot grasp the thing, what it is. It's impossible to convey by words the actual scene in the trenches. Impossible. Without feeling. And then if anyone tells you anyone of it, unless they've been there, they wouldn't understand. Because how can you convey to a person who's dead that second? That's rather Irish, isn't it? But how can you explain that he was there this minute and he's not there now? you just can't express, I couldn't anyway, it might be natural could express his emotions that way, but I don't think I could, not to put it down in cold print. I mean, how can you express the point of view when you get, as we did, shell shock, when we got two shells down the neighbouring dugout and now an officer came up to miles on the fire step, pulling his bend out, excuse my language, because this is actually what happened, pulling his head up, and so let me get out the bastard, and just crawl up to him, so we had to sit on him, pull him back and sit on him. How can we express that in terms that you're going to imply anything? That's what I mean.
What other things were, what was the smell like?
Well, the smell was like, depending on what sector you was in. A matter of fact, in the Somme Plains, and especially around this particular fort, it smelt just like a cemetery, no more, no less. And of course, if there's any corpses left unburied, which there was no end, it didn't stop to smell. It sunk to high heaven. A whole lot did, and the whole was, what is the smell of burnt gunpowder, of decomposing corpses, and what have you? Not a nice smell at all, and a whole lot smelled that. On the top of that, there's the gas. I mean, if you went in the line, and your buttons, if you never had your gas mask on, your buttons was all green as soon as you come out. Well, as a matter of fact, as soon as you got in, you was green. So that is your gas, and that your smell of gas. So what was the smell of gas? The smell of gunpowder, explosions, the cornet in there, and so forth, and the corpses. Well, it was a smell not out of this world. Can we put it that way?
Was it always noisy, or was it very quiet?
That depends on the sector. I mean, when we come down the Yeep sector, 24 hours a day, you stand 24 hours a day. How you slept is immaterial. You stand to 24 hours a day, night and day. There's no sleeping. The penalty for sleeping is the death penalty. Well, whether that was ever a coming point, that's another point, but that was what you were told. There's your front, you face that. You stand to night and day. Never relax. If you do relax, it's only about 50 yards from you. You're the last one to know about it. And all that. On the other hand, in this particular episode up on the Marne front, if you heard a shot fired, you want to know who the hell were playing at. If trees was growing there, birds were singing, you know, damn well there's no sales being farmed, because birds don't stop there, they're away. If flowers grow, trees grow, there's nothing happening. And that's what it was like. And when you sit in the front line with the helmet off, which was strictly against orders, nevertheless, when you did that, that was a quiet sector. But that was few and far between. Out of the frying pan, into the fire. I mean, you know, somebody kidding somebody.
Before you left for the Western Front, how much training did you get?
Well, we enlisted. In fact, I volunteered. I didn't need to go up until a month after 18, but I was so determined to go in that I went in. I volunteered a month before.
Could I interrupt and ask you on that particular point? The war had been going on for a long time.
3 years.
And yet you were still keen to join up.
Yes.
Why was this a common feeling? Can you recall? Or?
Well, I wouldn't say it was uncommon. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I wouldn't say it was common. Depending on your outlook, I suppose. I mean, after all, we had always been a military family. I mean, we traced back right beyond my grandfather. And all those in the Army Hospital Corps, it's immaterial, it was service. And we'd always traced it right back, and we do today. And as such, I suppose it was inbred. I mean, call it whichever you like, it was inbred, and I wanted to go. The exact reason I wouldn't determine, except the fact that I was going, I was determined to go. Nevertheless, what we'd heard, what we hadn't heard. At the same time, I'm hesitant to try and be swell-headed or bigoted in any way, but I must say this, there was an element of there that we got to do our bit. They'd done their bit for 3 years, it's up to us to carry it on. That's our attitude, and I don't wish to be ignominious, or whatever the term is. I must say that in all truthfulness. But there again, as I say, couldn't fall loose, we did it, and I'm glad we did.
If we could recap to the question on training a moment. What sort of training did you have for trench warfare?
Quite fair. We had the normal infantry training on trench warfare, that is, bodies of soldiers were being put in trenches, and then you went over the bayonet charge, and you bayonet whatever was coming in front. That was to test your reaction, to get your reaction as quick, if anything come at you, because it's either him or you. After then, we went into intensive Lewis gun training, and I was trained as number one. Well, we had revolvers, and we had to use them in the same way as we did rifles, and with the revolver. And if I remember rightly, we were taught to press the trigger and hold it with your thumb. I think I'm right on this. It's a long, long time.
Cock it.
Cock it, but you hold your trigger. So there's the slightest reaction on that hand,
yes.
and that your thumb would go off. A revolver takes some pulling, not like a rifle. It's harder to pull, well, the ours was anyway. Mm. And we held the trigger back with the cocking hand, the thumb on that. And I believe our instructions was if any nervous reaction, whatever come there, I mean, it was in front of you as your enemy, there's no friend. Whatever come there, it went. Better safe than sorry, because if you don't, he does. That was the only answer to that one. Basically, we should have had... Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we should have had 12 months training. But I went into the fact that the March 21st of March 1918 push came on, almost decimated the 5th Army. Perhaps you remember in history, General Gough called back for a disgrace for it, which it wasn't, which the authority was wrong. We were sent out on